morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, May 29th. Today, we're talking to Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins about the latest group of ski industry workers in Colorado who want to unionize. Before we start, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance is a workers' comp provider that's now offering enhanced coverage across the country. Pinnacle provides protection to Colorado businesses as they grow, no matter where that may be. Pinnacle goes where Colorado businesses go. Visit Pinnacle, that's PINNACOL.com for more information. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1998, near a bridge over McElmo Creek on the south side of Cortez, Officer Dale Claxton pulled over a stolen water tank truck. Before he left his cruiser, a man jumped from the cab and riddled Claxton with bullets from a modified automatic rifle. The policeman's murder instigated the West's largest manhunt to date as law enforcement descended on the Four Corners region. Many questions linger about the intentions of the three men, McVean, Mason, and Pylon, driving the stolen vehicle that day. All three expressed hatred toward authority, including government and law enforcement. Why they stole the truck from a construction site near Ignacio, headquarters of the Southern Ute Reservation, is but the first of many uncertainties. After Claxton's murder, the three fled westward into the desert, straddling the Colorado-Utah line. Local, state, and federal officers pursued them, three of whom suffered gunshot wounds during the search. Rangers and tourists at Hovenweep National Monument hid in a ravine near the visitor center to avoid the fugitives, who received aid from people who shared their views in the isolated region. Governor Roy Romer dispatched the Colorado National Guard to assist in the search, coordinated from Cajon in Dolores County. Romer permitted the Guard to pursue leads into Utah, inspiring complaints of overreaching from the neighboring state. Within a week, law enforcement found Mason's body on Navajo land in Utah. Hunters found Pylon's remains in the desert in 1999, but 8 years passed before a cowboy stumbled on McVean's bones a few miles away. How and when each man died remain topics of debate, as do their plans for the stolen truck. A sign at the McElmo Creek Bridge honors Claxton, as do the names of the police headquarters and a federal building in Cortez and Durango, respectively. Next, our feature story.
Welcome to the Colorado Sun podcast, everyone, and thanks for tuning in today. I'm David Krause, one of the team editors here at the Colorado Sun, and I am happy, as always, to be here with Sun reporter Jason Blevins talking a little bit of outdoors on a Monday. JB, how's it going?
Doing well, DK.
So let's chat about what's going on. It's the end of the ski season, but you have some interesting news and kind of a trend that we're starting to see. The latest group of ski industry workers in Colorado who want to form a union is up in Crested Butte with the lift mechanics. Jason, what's going on up there in CB?
Yeah, the lift mechanics, lift maintenance, operation crew, and electricians this week unanimously voted, 100% vote, to join a union. It's sort of a that unanimous vote. They're asking Vail Resorts, it's there at Crested Butte Mountain Resort. Vail Resorts owns Crested Butte Mountain Resort, and they're asking Vail Resorts to recognize their union without a voluntary recognition that you can only kind of get when you have 100% vote of your workers like that. That would sort of sidestep the need for an election, which can take up to 6 weeks. So still waiting to hear back from Vail Resorts, but this is sort of a growing trend among resort workers, and this is the second ever lift operations crew that has formed a union in the U.S.
Yeah, you mentioned in the story that you're working on that Park City had that, their lifties, their lift crew did that. Let's talk about that. You kind of hit on it. You know, it's an effort going on around the ski area labor movement, mainly among ski patrollers. There's been quite a few in Colorado who are starting to join the National United, United Professional Ski Patrollers of America Union. Explain to us what that union is and why are we seeing more people, more groups like Loveland, Breck, Purgatory, Steamboat, a bunch of others starting to get into the union?
Yeah, the UPSPA, United Professional Ski Patrollers of America, is a growing union. Loveland Ski Area voted to unionize patrollers there earlier this year. Last year, Purgatory patrollers joined. Breckenridge Patrollers joined. Crested Buttes had unionized patrollers for a long time. Steamboat, Telluride, Mount Stevens, Park City Mountain Resort in Utah. And Aspen Skiing has its own, Aspen Skiing Company has a private union as well. It's this sort of a growing trend as, you know, ski area professionals are, you know, they're clamoring for higher wages so that they can fit into, you know, find a home in these high dollar mountain valleys. It's very expensive to live in some of these mountain valleys. And, you know, it's a very competitive environment for workers. We've got the labor crisis, got the housing crisis, very difficult times for workers. And, you know, they're finding that you can work together collectively and bargain for, you know, better working conditions, better operating, you know, hours and things like that, as well as higher pay. And you're starting to see it more and more. And it's a trend that seems to be pretty vibrant. We've seen, you know, over the past few decades, labor has been in decline in the United States. But generally in Colorado, especially lately, as the cost of living goes up, cost of housing goes up, starting to see sort of a resurgence in unionization among service workers around the state, really.
And it's interesting. We'll get to that. But Jason, do you think, and I know you and I have chatted about this, you know, just between the two of us, but that whole theory and that whole idea and that, you know, that I guess, for lack of a better word, romanticism around being a ski bum and, you know, getting 10 people to a place and all that, we're losing that in the mountain towns, and it's simply because of the cost of living and things like that. Do you think that's another reason why we're starting to see more of a push? Because it has become more of a, I don't want to say that it wasn't a job before, right? But it's like, this is a way, you know, this is my way of life. This is how I'm going to do things. So I got to get paid more because I can't couch surf and we can't even find places to put 10 patrollers in the house, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that is true. You know, we've heard it over and over, sort of the death of the ski bum, and that whole idea of, you know, companies, you know, thinking their employees should be lucky to, you know, spend a season skiing and things like that. That's changing right now, and last year we saw, or 2 years ago, we saw Vail Resorts really feel the pinch of the labor crisis when they were unable to maybe get some lifts open and train open in time for Christmas holidays, and, you know, sort of double whammy with some COVID, you know, loss of workers there. But they came back, and a year ago they, you know, invested $175 million in their staff for workforce development, as well as higher wages, raised the minimum wage in the across all their network of resorts to $20 an hour. You know, that was followed by just about everybody in the industry. So you're seeing this, you know, sort of floating of recognition in a lot of these mountain towns that, you know, workers are truly essential and absolutely key. And you're starting to see more investment, higher wages and things like that. But sometimes that isn't keeping pace with you know, the cost of living up here and the cost of housing and the competitive nature for some of these workers. And, you know, I was talking to electrician and lift mechanic here in Crested Butte today, and he was saying, you know, for a while there, McDonald's was paying its new hires more than I was getting paid as a, you know, sort of a highly skilled worker in this pretty specialized industry in the at the ski area. And, you know, pay went up and that helped, but Vail Resorts raised their minimum wage to $20 an hour, but they didn't necessarily carry that all the way through all their pay scales. So I think they call that wage compression when some of the new guys are making, you know, as much as some of the OGs and veterans that have been, you know, working at the Hill for a while. And then you add in, you know, some of the home building and some of the, you know, major projects up here in some of the high country towns, you know, and there's high need for electricians and mechanics and things like that. So people can go find, you know, higher paying jobs pretty easily, especially with, you know, skill sets and, you know, in demand skill sets in these mountain towns. So, you know, it's sort of a convergence of issues that are coming around this high country labor crisis. And it's really fueling this push for unionization and this collective bargaining push as more workers, you know, come together and realize that, you know, collectively they can maybe, you know, eke out more pay.
So let's circle back. You mentioned it a little bit ago, but the idea of, you know, is this a reflection of what the consolidation of the resort industry is going through right now, right? You got Vail Resorts, you've got Alterra Mountain, all getting ski areas under this corporate ownership. How do you think, Jason, that has weighed in to this bigger push to unionize among patrollers and now lifties?
And lifties? Yeah, Vail Resorts has seen it the most, you know, most recently at Breckenridge and now Crested Butte Lift Mechanics, and it's a Mount Stevens ski area. It's seen these, you know, sort of a growing push. There was a vote at Keystone that didn't pass. The patrollers declined to pursue a union there. But, you know, Vail Resorts is looking for synergies, and they combine a lot of management, you know, structure and consolidate it in a headquarters down in Broomfield. And that maybe leaves workers feeling less connected to their bosses, less able to, you know, address workplace issues and address wage issues and, you know, some of the safety issues that for patrollers and some of the gear supply, you know, that they've required, you know, and some of the money they have to spend to be able to be well equipped as a ski patroller. So there's a lot of issues around patrollers, and, you know, it's sort of new with the mechanics and the electricians, but it's the same issue that, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, my rent's gone up, you know, it's doubled in the past 2 years and my pay went up 10 cents an hour. You know, it's just not keeping pace. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm out here in Crested Butte right now. I sat on a panel this morning with a bunch of people and we were talking about the origin of mountain town newspapers. You know, all these towns were mining town newspapers. And back in the day when they were mining towns, typically newspaper, you know this from your time at Aspen Times, you know, they're kind of like company newspapers and then the worker newspapers. And there, these towns were really characterized by this sort of labor conflict with, you know, major high dollar mining operators and then the, you know, miners grinding it out there in the, you know, in the gold mines, silver mines, coal mines, you know, and it's in many ways we're starting to see this kind of circle back around with big corporate owner in a small town and, you know, working folk are growing, you know, chafing under the bridle of corporate ownership and, you know, big money and, you know, so it's, there can be parallels drawn to the turn of the century sort of labor strife that you saw in a lot of these high mountain valleys and maybe was kind of emerging right now in some of these mountain towns.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that into play because you're right. You know, it's that whole thing where these, as these companies get larger, they're the biggest employer in that area, right? And, you know, Vail Resorts has got, you know, this huge employee base. Aspen Ski Company has this huge employee base. And so it's, the dynamic has changed because people, you know, I don't want to say they're fending for themselves, but it kind of feels like that. You got to be able to feel like you're being heard because you're going up against a, you know, a different dynamic. It's not like, you know, what we kind of see at some of the smaller places like a Monarch or a Ski Cooper, right? Or even an A-Basin.
You know, it's important to know that we're seeing this kind of across Colorado. You know, there's government employees and teachers in Colorado's kind of expanded their collective bargaining rights. And, you know, the workers at Swift Beef over in Greeley, hearing about Starbucks all the time, all the grocery stores, you're hearing about it, you know, the King Supers strikes and whatnot from a couple of years ago and smaller outfits, Meow Wolf, Trader Joe's. So, you know, there's kind of a upswell of labor activity and labor organization in Colorado right now. And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with our increasing cost of living and maybe wages not keeping pace as much as it is corporate ownership and consolidation in some of these companies.
Yeah, always interesting, Jason, when we see these kind of things collide, right? You know, we get up here in our mountain towns and things are great, but then you're like, wait a minute, it's getting harder and harder. And always interesting to kind of see how the industry, which is brings so much money in tourism to our state, kind of how that is continuing to evolve every year, really, it seems like.
I know. We were talking about that mining stuff, and I was like drawing parallels again to the mining time. And, you know, there's a couple decades there in the 1860s and 70s during the silver boom and the gold boom when the pace of change in these mountain communities was unprecedented. It never happened before. You know, thousands of people moving to these towns, you know, with the dream of making money and striking it rich and, you know, living in the high country. And, you know, I see a lot of parallels to what has happened in the past couple few years up here in some of these, you know, really beautiful mountain valleys with influx of new people, with a lot of money coming in, kind of changing and the pace of change and the transformation and the way things are sort of falling together, there's a lot of parallels you can draw to those, you know, some of the swift and transformative years when miners flocked to these high country hamlets back in the day.
Yeah, awesome stuff, Jason. Really cool. Well, listen, thanks for taking the time to kind of walk us through that. This whole idea, we'll have that story up on ColoradoSun.com later this week. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And if you do want to read more about the great Colorado outdoors, I really encourage you, like I do every week, to sign up for Jason's weekly Outsider newsletter. Comes out every Thursday, hits your inbox. You can do that at ColoradoSun.com/outdoors. Jason, make it a great week, buddy.
Thanks, DK.
You can read more at ColoradoSun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Skiers and snowboarders chasing the historic snowfall this winter set a record for U.S. skier visits at 64.7 million. The record continues an upward trend in the industry. 10 of the busiest U.S. ski seasons on record have landed in the past 15 winters, despite a warming climate threatening snowpacks and shortening winters. The record crowds this winter indicate the resort industry is healthy. Colorado ski resorts do not discuss visitation numbers. The state's resort trade group, Colorado Ski Country, represents 21 of the state's 28 ski areas and will report statewide visitation numbers in early June. Colorado ranks poorly for pet ownership, yet at the top of the list for dog adoptions. Denver is the fourth best city for brunch lovers, seventh most Irish city in the U.S., and number 18 for hangover cures. The number of rankings and lists of best places, things, or foods is coming in bigger waves every day. And while the surveys are mostly fun and lighthearted, one marketing expert from the University of Denver warns that to some extent we are getting addicted to these lists. There's even an academic term for the reason. Cognitive minimizers. In other words, shortcuts to information. Colorado's U.S. senators are seeking nearly $1.5 billion for special projects in the state through the earmark process, now known as Congressional Directed Spending Requests. Senator John Hickenlooper is seeking $831 million for 424 projects, while Senator Michael Bennett is seeking $650 million for 381 projects. Six of Colorado's eight U.S. House members are asking for a combined $188 million. The requests must make it through a lengthy process if and before they are added to the final federal fiscal year 2024 budget, which will be posted sometime later this year. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, ColoradoSun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at ColoradoSun.com. Thanks.